And it's time once again for Fresh Ubuntu, a podcast all about Ubuntu. And I'm going to keep it short this week on the intro because this is an especially long, long podcast. A little over an hour, and I apologize for that. But we had a lot of things to say, and hopefully they will appeal to many of you. For those of you who are having short commutes this week, put it on pause when you get to your work and then listen to it on the way home. I'll let you listen to the rest of it for now, and then we'll talk to you again very shortly. Okay, here we go. And we are here today with Peter and myself, Harlem, and we are experiencing a little post-Gutsy release hangover, and we'll get to that in a little bit. It has been about a week since the last release, and you'll get this a little over a week since the release of Gutsy. But in any case, I'm here with Peter, and he's over in the East Coast, as usual. How are things going?
Hey, folks, this is Peter. Things are going well.
So, anything new since last week other than Gutsy news?
Having a little bit of a heat wave here, so I've been able to get in a little more mountain biking these last few days, which is very nice. Nice treat.
Well, that's good. We are experiencing a little bit of a heat wave, too, over here on the West Coast, Northwest, Pacific Northwest. I want to extend some concern for the folks in Southern California who are experiencing all those fires. We just, our thoughts and prayers are going out to them this week, and hopefully they're all safe and sound as soon as this podcast is out. But things are going well over here. I've installed Gutsy on one of my laptops. I'm waiting to do it on my dual boot desktop. That'll come in next week or so after a few more bug fixes. Other than that, how many computers have you upgraded this week?
Let's see. I guess really only, well, three at this point as of about 10 minutes ago. Three, and I also turned a friend of mine on to Ubuntu, and he downloaded both the Wubi installer and also my wife and I. Oh, actually, I forgot about that. It's one of the things. Yeah, last weekend we were in Maine on vacation.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And bumped into an old friend over there, and he was asking me, he said, you know, is there anything I can do to speed up this old, you know, my old machine running XP, and, you know, it's just slow, and he was also complaining about Windows, and he recently bought a Mac. Actually, if anybody followed me over from the Mac New podcast to Fresh Ubuntu, they'll know he was a guest on our last episode, and it was basically myself and my former co-host of that show helping this, you know, non-savvy, non-technical user switch from Windows to a Mac, and he's since become a real convert. And since then, my love of Mac has kind of waned a little bit, and my love of Linux has strengthened. So I said, well, you know, before you go and buy yourself a new desktop Mac, here, take this CD, and I just happen to have my Gutsy installation CD. I said, here, boot off this from your machine, and if you like what you see, then, you know, click the install button, and I'll walk you through it if you have any problems. So he's all excited about that and, you know, giving new life to, you know, like a year and a half old XP machine, but I'm sure it just had, like, you know, spyware and other stuff just slowing it down. So that was my good deed for the weekend, I think.
Hey, great. That's awesome. And now, where were you?
I was in Maine. We went off to the coast for a few days just to get away from work and stuff.
Oh, great. That's great. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself and you had a chance to convert somebody over to Ubuntu. Huh? That's great.
Exactly.
So you can write the whole thing off now, right?
Yeah, he's always jokes whenever we go out to lunch or dinner or whatnot and I'm buying, he says, you know, as we're settling up or the check comes, he says, computers. I said, what? He says, well, now you can write this dinner off. I said, it's not quite that simple, but thank you anyway. Yeah. At least I can write off a portion. You know?
Right, exactly. So, well, cool. Why don't we just get on with the rest of the show? As I mentioned earlier, we have been, for the most part, have been experiencing some post-Gutsy release hangover. And to explain a little bit more, it's not quite as bad as when Edgy was released, and it seems to be getting less and less severe as each release goes on. So We'll go ahead and let you know what we liked and what we disliked about Gutsy. This is firsthand account of our updates, our installations, so we'll just go ahead and take it away. Why don't you go ahead and start us off, Peter, with anything, really?
Well, let's see. If you recall from last episode, when we left it, I had, what, two or three different... two downloads going. One was just an upgrade I was doing on a Feisty machine, and I was also downloading the huge DVD, and I forget, we were given, like, you know, 4 hours left, 30 days left, whatnot, but things actually finally did download, and I actually went home that night and started the download there as well, and all of my downloads completed overnight. So the next morning, I came back to the office, and the DVD download had finished, and my upgrade, you know, that I was doing through Upgrade Manager had finished as well. It went fairly well on the one desktop that I did an upgrade on. It seems to, you know, be working normally. The only problem I'm really having on that now is that I'm not able to get the screen resolution right just yet. My Xorg.conf file is not recognizing. I have a wide panel 19-inch display, and its native resolution is 1440 pixels by 900, and I just can't get it to do anything other than the standard, you know, 1024, 800, or 640, you know, by 480. So that's a little disappointing, but I'm still working on that. My laptop, I did a fresh install, so I just wiped out the partition because I hadn't really been using my Feisty partition much on it, and that went very well. I noticed a bunch of things that are improved over that. So I don't know. You want me to just leap right into those now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and leap right into it. And you, I'll just, you know, chime in as cool. We go along. But let me say this: that I think a fresh install was probably the best way to go. You know, from my own experience, the fresh installation was after I downloaded the ISO and burned it. The rest of the installation took 30 minutes, and that's even on this old laptop. So, fresh installation was the best way to go. So, anyway, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, I agree. Every operating system that I've ever had the pleasure or displeasure of having to upgrade, when given a choice, I always have wanted to do a fresh, clean installation, because it just seems like it never goes perfectly. You know, there's always something weird left over afterwards. And plus, especially on the Windows side of things, I mean, this is not so much on the Mac or the Mac or Linux side, but it always seems to me that, you know, like, crap just builds up. And if you do the upgrade, you're bringing that all along with you. It's kind of like moving, you know, and you're moving all of your baggage and stuff, and you bring it along with you. And a fresh install is like starting off clean and, you know, the opportunity to make a nice clean slate. So
yeah, you're right. Exactly.
Yeah. So the installation process I found was pretty much the same as it had been. Since I was just installing off of the regular CD, I did not try the encrypted partition option that we mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I did notice right off the bat that desktop effects, you know, known as Compiz Fusion, are enabled by default. I thought it was done pretty well. They're not, you know, jarring or intrusive, but, you know, you get a little bit of the wobbly windows and the, you know, when you maximize and minimize windows and stuff, you see some, you know, a little bit of eye candy. And also switching from desktop to desktop is animated now. So I like that. I thought that was done fairly well. I was a little disappointed that right off the bat, the things were a little bit limited. So I went into the system menu, and then under preferences and appearance, I was able to find the appearance preferences. And there's a tab on there called visual effects, and that's the new one. And basically, by default, you get none, normal, and extra. Those are your three options. And normal is what was enabled by default. And they list that as provides improved usability and a good balance between attractiveness and moderate performance requirements.
Right.
You know, that's a good place to start. Middle of the road. I was a little disappointed that right off the bat, I noticed that it did break, hampered my ability to log into Twitter. For starters, and I'm just going to double check this, but basically I tried to log into Twitter, and the text entry field where you enter your name and your password, mm-hmm. they weren't lining up properly, so the cursor wasn't, like, you couldn't really see where the text, where the cursor was. And now I attributed that to the desktop effects, but I didn't actually go back and confirm that, so I'm going to try to do that right now and just see if that was actually caused by Compiz. The reason that I assumed that that was the case is prior, when I had installed Beryl previously on Feisty, I noticed that it did break, well, when I say break, it, you know, caused some stuff to not show up properly in several applications. And one of them was Game, you know, the Instant Messenger client. Basically, no text would show up on the screen. That's kind of a problem. if you're in instant messaging and you're trying to talk to folks, you know, it's kind of handy to have the text show up. So, all right, so I am in Twitter right now, and I see that the stuff is not showing up right, so I'm going to disable my desktop effects, and sure enough, I go to the login page, and it does render properly. So there are some problems. It's not super critical. You know, I was able to work around it.
Right.
But you know, it's a little concerning, because if all of a sudden people just, they don't know, if a non-technical person isn't aware that, you know, if you're having problems, go and disable these desktop effects, you know, people are going to, I'm afraid people might say stuff like, oh, this Ubuntu thing can't, you know, it doesn't work with Twitter or whatever, you know, or this web app or whatever that they're running. So that's a little bit of a concern.
Good catch on that one. And also, you never really know what is causing it. So thanks for letting us know.
And, right. And even now, like, I had to just, you know, go and troubleshoot it myself right now because I hadn't gotten around to it. But, you know, I wouldn't have known unless I turned it off myself to find out.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So yeah. Good catch. I'm wondering if you'll probably be putting a bug report in, right?
I will do that. You betcha. Okay. Yep. I am going to do that. I forget where you do that nowadays.
It's at Launchpad. You can do it on Launchpad.
Oh, you just go to... I thought there was a tool. Is that only if it crashes?
I think that's only if it crashes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't... Luckily, it hasn't come to that.
Oh, the bug... so. Oh, you mean the bug reporting tool?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought there was a bug reporting tool built in, but it may only show up if things crash. Anyway. Another thing about Compiz Fusion is that you don't get the control panel installed by default.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So I had to install that. And one thing I did think was cool is once that is installed, they put a link to it under that Preferences Appearance application there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you go to Preferences, Appearance, Apps, Visual Effects, and then you get an extra button which says Custom and a Preferences button. And when you click on that, it's the same as loading the Compiz Config Settings Manager, which is what I had to install. And once you do that, I mean, there are so many settings. You can literally just sit here for days trying things out. It does take a little bit of navigating and a little research to get used to Compiz. And if you've never used it before, just because there's so much stuff, there's so many menus and options and... You know, I don't even. We could actually do a whole series of podcasts on, you know, customizing Compiz.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I'm not going to go into that now. But just be aware that if you are looking for how to really customize it, you can't do it by default. You need to install the Compiz Config Settings Manager.
Yeah. So tell our listeners what the command is for that.
Okay, let me double check that.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm just going to do an apt cache. I've got my command prompt open because I'm a command line kind of guy. I'm just going to do an apt cache search Compiz. And that's going to give me, let's see, Compiz plugins, Compiz Fusion. Okay. Yep, it is. It's Compiz Config Settings Manager. So to install it, you can either go through the graphical interface and search for it, or from a command prompt, you would just do sudo space apt-get space install space compiz, that's C-O-M-P-I-Z dash, oh sorry, compiz, no dash, compiz config, C-O-N-F-I-G dash settings dash manager. So it's an apt-get install compisconfig-settings-manager. And then once you do that, you get the customization that lets you do all the fancy stuff.
I wonder what the reasoning was for leaving that out, you know?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's the thing, is if you're going to give people the... I don't know. I'm maybe it's because they're afraid that the new user is going to get overwhelmed because of all the settings.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you really could get lost. I mean, that control panel is massive. There's so many options. I could see a new user going in and, you know, just you grab a slider bar the wrong way, and then the next thing you know, it takes literally... you know, a minute or so for a window to close or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could see that. That's probably why they, you know, probably wanted to keep you out of it, but I don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't use Compiz on my laptop. It's just the hardware is too old, but I can see where, you know, somebody just fiddling around with it might even break it, you know.
Yep. So, yeah.
Cool.
But, another thing I've noticed, that there's still a little bit of bugs. One thing that I had mentioned, I think, last week was that I never liked having to sacrifice wobbly windows for window resistance, you know, like window snapping. So when you have two windows and you line them up next to each other, they snap together so that they don't necessarily overlap. And I guess, I don't know when that happened, but as of Compiz Fusion anyway, that has been fixed. And I do have my window snapping and wobbly windows.
Excellent.
So, yeah, and it actually looks kind of cool. I'm happy that they figured that out. There is a bit of a bug, and I'm able to reproduce it pretty easily. It's kind of funny. On the note of window snapping, I have a terminal open, as I said, and I just dragged it over to the left edge of my screen. And instead of snapping it right in the left edge, I moved it a little beyond... you know, so that it moves out like just a few pixels beyond the left edge of my screen, and I let it go. And the left side of the window just bobs up and down, and it wobbles, wobbles, wobbles. It's like it's bouncing, or, you know, it's got a nervous tick or something. And it's kind of annoying, but it's also kind of amusing when it happens.
Right.
And, you know, it's easy to fix, too.
Right.
But it just shows, you know, they've got a little bit of work, you know, to do, but it's still, it's a very impressive display manager. I don't believe that this is going to be the make or break thing, you know, that makes someone switch from Mac to, you know, or Windows to Linux or something. But it is nice to have the eye candy, and I do like that.
Yeah.
So the one thing I noticed too, I think I emailed you about this over the weekend, was the default desktop background for Gutsy. I went downstairs onto my server, and I have the GNOME desktop running on my server, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need it, but, you know, I have it there. And the background that comes with Gutsy actually reminds me of the one that shipped with Dapper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Dapper background was darker also. I think this one is darker still. But, you know, the Dapper one was somewhere between this and the one that shipped with Feisty.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's that much of a diversion. I don't know what all the hubbub was about. So.
Well, I think what it was, the hubbub was that it was put in there without, you know, approval of all these people, I think.
Right.
But this, and you mentioned this on your email, that this was a wallpaper for an earlier version. And then when Feisty came out, they lightened it up and changed it a little bit, just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And I dislike this wallpaper. and so I went into the wallpaper manager and I found something else that it also shipped with. It ships with three wallpapers.
Mm-hmm.
One, the human theme wallpaper, which is your typical you know, light tan, brownish wallpaper. And then it comes with this very interesting, other interesting wallpaper, which I think they should make the default one.
Is it the elephant one?
Is it an elephant? Or,
yeah.
You know, it looks like an elephant, the skin of an elephant, or,
yes.
You know, the dirt or something like that.
Yeah, I thought it was dirt. I thought it was like, you know, Kalahari Desert or
right,
something.
Uh-huh.
But the name of that image is elephant.
Oh, okay.
So I have to assume it's a brown or a brownified elephant.
Right. And it looks like the skin of an elephant, but it's dark, you know, chocolate brown, and which I kind of like a little bit better. It looks a little more rugged to me. And
yep.
Whereas the other swirly stuff, you know, looks kind of, I don't know, reminds me of the 80s, you know. It's really, you know, fancy and shimmery and not a whole lot of substance to it. But, you know, it's just me. And so, you know, I ended up changing the wallpaper. But my suggestion to Ubuntu is make this one the default.
Well, why don't we put in, you submit your bug report.
Okay.
And tell them that they used the wrong desktop wallpaper.
I'll do that.
And then when you do that, I will submit my bug report and tell them that they are still, ever since EdgyF'd, using the wrong startup.wav file, the
yes.
wrong opening sound.
Perfect. That is perfect. Okay.
People, you know, that's one thing. I don't know. I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but the startup sound that comes with ever since Edgy, I just hate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's jarring, it's loud, it's intrusive. And the one, my wife described the one that comes with Dapper as, you know, it's like, now for your moment of zen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's relaxing, it's soothing, it's really nice. So I told you earlier, I said, the very first thing I do, and I mean the first thing I do when I install a new copy of Ubuntu, is I open up the terminal, and I do an SSH session to copy a file from my Dapper server so that I have the startup and shutdown wave files from Dapper.
So, right.
And I need to double check, but I'm pretty sure I can post those anywhere, right? So
yeah.
You know, the it's all open license and stuff. So I'll probably put a link to those on my blog somewhere where you can download those. If you hate the startup sound as much as I do, go back to the Dapper one, which is really nice. If you haven't heard it, I recommend you listen to it because I really like that sound so much compared to you know, the one that's shipping currently.
Yeah,
I'll put a bug report in for that.
Okay. Every now and again, I'll put it on my on the podcast. It's that slow.
Yeah.
Sounds like those things you hang out your window.
Yeah, wind chimes.
Yeah, wind chimes, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So.
Well, it's the second. It's generally the second sound effect that you play on the show because you've got the open. You used to use it as the opening music.
I used to way back when I didn't have
way
any
back.
Theme music.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep. Originally, I remember you did that, and
yep.
then I was concerned because I remember the first one when you used the new you know, techno
right.
thing there for the opener. I was like, oh no, he got rid of that, and then you use it as the intro again. So I was like, okay, good. I'm happy.
Yeah, so. I'm also looking for new theme music too. So something a little more, you know, easy going. But we are not picky
maybe our
here.
Listeners? Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm getting picky, and let's move on to more stuff that's relevant.
Okay.
It reminds me actually on Dig today, I saw someone posted 10 flaws
in Ubuntu.
That's it.
Yeah, one of them was that Compiz setting.
Yep.
The Compiz config settings manager.
Compiz config set. Yeah, that
yep.
you don't have it by default
right.
and stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. He had a couple of other things. You know, he said. Anyway, I don't want to go into that. I thought his stuff was even more nitpicky than me, except
oh,
for
yeah.
you know the sound thing. Anyway.
Yeah, I have it up actually, and just to go down
yep.
part of the list is the Java support he didn't like.
Yep.
The file manager. Well. Let's go. Wacom tablets, you have to manually set that up. But if you're a regular average user, you aren't going to have a Wacom tablet. So
mm-hmm.
it's really a specialized piece of input device. Then, of course, he mentions the Compiz config settings manager. You know, a couple other things, some fonts that aren't consistent and that kind of thing. So really, he was really being... you know, ultra nitpicky, so.
Yeah, most of his stuff is related to, like, what I've been going on for the last few minutes. You know, it's cosmetic stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's good, because, I mean, compared to the 40-some-odd percent of, you know, surveyed people who had serious problems upgrading from Dapper to Edgy, this is much better.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, light years better.
Light years. Moving on my list, I was so hopeful for Evolution. I had heard about the new features of Evolution. And, like, you know, every time I install a brand new Ubuntu, I fire up Evolution the first time because it is, you know, it's the easiest way to get access to my Exchange server. And I say, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. I'm going to try this. And it usually takes somewhere between 15 and 30 seconds. And I say, nope, I need Thunderbird. So this time it lasted about a minute. And then I said, nope, I need Thunderbird. I was playing with Evolution. I saw that they have a notifier. It did connect to my Exchange server more reliably than it had in previous versions, but it ran for about a minute and then it crashed. And that was something new too. When an application stops responding now, what it does is the same effect as when you do a sudo or a gksudo, or you get prompted for your password within GNOME. That application which stops responding gets darkened. You know, the whole screen where that app is goes dark.
Right.
And I didn't know what the hell was going on. I'm sitting there, you know, like trying to get my email, and all of a sudden the app goes, you know, fades to darkness in the background. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? But then I realized what was happening is it had just stopped responding, and eventually it did fully crash. But Firefox, I think, did that to me at one point. It didn't crash, but it was blocked for whatever reason. And instead of just getting the little spinning ball or something, I got the whole thing darkened. And once I was used to that, I said, oh, that's actually kind of neat. Of course, that doesn't happen all that often because, you know, generally Linux is really good at the whole multitasking thing. So, you know, it doesn't happen, but it's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Anyway, Evolution, you know, it wasn't... It's still not stable enough for me to really appreciate the new features. And one thing I thought that was kind of annoying is I got voicemail. Since I have an asterisk box, I have all my voicemails come to me via email as WAV attachments. And Evolution has the ability, basically, when you have an attached WAV file, it shows up right in the message as a button, and you can just say, you know, click on it to play. And I clicked on it, and nothing happened. And so I just waited for a little while. Nothing happened. I downloaded the attachment, double-clicked it, and then MPlayer or whatever Totem, I forget whatever the default app is, fired up, and it says, oh, you don't have the codec necessary to play this. And I thought that was a little weird because the startup sound that we're talking about is a WAV file, and my voicemail was a WAV file. So how come I can play startup sounds and stuff, but I couldn't play this? Mm. That was a little confused. I don't know if, you know, if they're encoded differently or something, but I thought WAV was WAV.
Yeah. Interesting thing. So did you have to download the codec? And
I did. Yep.
And it worked.
I did. And it worked fine after that.
Huh, that's strange.
But, yeah, I didn't understand what was going on there. So I've never been really totally clear on the whole thing about, you know, codecs and audio file formats and stuff, though. So I didn't, you know, I just said, I don't know. The first day, I tried to install Thunderbird, and I was not able to, but it seemed mostly to be just slowness on the repositories. Yep. So after that, everything is working fine. LogMeIn.com. I use that a lot. Now, LogMeIn.com is a service. It's a competitor to GoToMyPC, and if you're not familiar with it, what it basically lets you do is remote control Windows machines over the Internet securely from a web browser. It's a really cool service, and they have a free version, which is completely free, and basically gives you remote access to any Windows machine that you have the service installed on. Really neat. As of Feisty, that stopped working for me, and I never was able to get a definitive answer as to why, but I think there was something, it was a certificate error, you know, so something with the encryption broke in Feisty. It worked fine under previous versions, it worked fine on the Mac, you know, the same version of Firefox all around, but I just could never get it to work under Feisty. Whatever it is, that's been fixed. That now works in Gutsy. So that's great. That's just one less reason that I needed to run Windows. So if I need to, I can control my own work machine at the office or a client machine running Windows via LogMeIn via my Ubuntu machine. Wireless connectivity. I had some problems under Feisty, again on this same laptop, same hardware, where for some reason the machine would default, it would connect to my neighbor's open, unsecured Linksys WAP access point. So I would fire it up and immediately, you know, get the little spinning thing, connecting, and boom, you are now connected to Linksys, and I would have like one bar of signal. And it didn't matter. You know, I could be like 4 feet away from my own access point, and it would not connect to it. Another thing I noticed, I just remembered this, was that I was not able, it would not store the correct WPA key for me. And I would look at it, and I would even open it up in the keyring manager, and it had a different 64-bit or 64-character key, and I could never get that to stick. So that was really annoying, because basically every time I booted up my machine, I had to keep my WPA key as a file on my desktop so that I could copy it and paste it into, you know, the wireless manager. That problem has been fixed. So in my opinion, wireless support is better already, and that's a very good thing. Tracker. Now, that's a big thing. Remember we talked a little bit about Beagle and how they were getting rid of it, and our suspicion was that it was for performance reasons. I am fairly certain that that is exactly why that happened now. After doing a little bit of reading on the Tracker search utility, I found out that Tracker is really just built on the command line utilities grep, find, and locate. And I thought that was really cool. And in the last couple of weeks, you know, the Man Page Minute, we've done locate and update DB. And we'll be working on find coming up soon, and grep will come back later when we get into text processing. But basically what they're doing is they're leveraging, you know, a searchable database of files that already exists on your computer. And it's pretty neat the way it works. Basically, the first thing you do, if you're looking for a file, the first thing Tracker does is it does a locate. And as I covered in, I think, 2 weeks ago in the Man Page Minute, locate is very fast because it indexes your hard drive. So it basically keeps a list of all the files on there. So, you know, if you know about a file that you want, you just type in its name, and the first thing it does is it searches file names in locate. If it doesn't find anything there, or even if it does, it then moves on and it does a find command. And the find is like a real-time search, and it's much more powerful than locate, but as a consequence, it's slower because it's real-time instead of indexed. And then if you want to search inside files, it uses a standard GNU utility called grep, which is basically a searching utility and a pattern matching utility. So the upshot of all this is you do not have a big, slow, you know, indexing service running constantly. And that's pretty good. I think the downside is that your search results may be a little slower. But I was just kind of tickled when I found out that they were just built on, you know, locate, find, and grep. I was just like, that's so cool. You know, leveraging the power of the command line here in a GUI and not having to add any extra overhead to your system. I thought that was a really good thing.
Yeah, and that's particularly the reason why I don't like a lot of these search, you know, desktop search engines to begin with, because there's a lot of behind the scenes indexing. I know it's prominent in Windows, in XP, and it uses a ton of resources, and I end up turning it off anyway, but you know, I don't use it that much to begin with, so why have that resource up and, you know, up and running and hogging all the system memory and whatnot. So I was glad to hear that these things are, you know, low overhead types of search tools, you know, built basically on command line stuff. So, yeah, that was a good find. And how did you find out about that, by the way?
Well, actually, that was the day, I think that was, what, Saturday night or so, and I had some coffee after dinner, and I just couldn't sleep. So I decided I was going to sit down and play with Gutsy for a little bit, and I said, well, let me find out about Tracker. So I went up to the Places menu in GNOME, and I clicked on Search for Files down at the bottom of that menu. And I did the really impressive thing. I clicked the help button, and I started reading.
You can do a lot of things with that.
It's amazing how much, I mean, you know, the expression RTFM, you know, read the fine material.
Right. That's the euphemism for that.
Exactly. No, it's amazing what you can find out if you just read a little bit. So I actually did it. And I'm not, you know, I am as guilty as anybody else. You know, the last thing I want to do is read the manual. But, you know, when you've got insomnia and you've been up for 2 hours straight and you've got nothing else to do, it's amazing what you can find. So, I went in. Go ahead, sorry.
You're getting a whole lot here, folks. You're getting medical advice, you know, how to cure your insomnia. Just go ahead and read the help files on your Ubuntu machine. We're offering it all today.
I had to mute you there for a second, laughing my head off. Okay, I'm back. Anyway, yes, online help, the cure for insomnia.
Right.
Anyway, so tracker's a good thing.
Yeah.
And then the last big thing that I have experimented with under Gutsy now is the write support for NTFS file system partitions.
I love it.
It is so cool. And I just had this brainstorm a few days ago. I said, you know, I just got this idea. And so I dropped to the command line again, big surprise. And what I did is I tracked down the default profile for my Thunderbird settings and my Firefox settings. What I did is I renamed those directories, and then I made symbolic links with the same names and pointed them to my Windows partition. And I blogged about how to find and how to move your partitions a while ago. That was back when I was on the Mac New podcast. I showed how to do it on a Macintosh. The procedure is the same on Linux too. And I'll probably go ahead and elaborate on that on my blog too. But I realized that what I did is whenever I install a new machine, I would go and grab those settings files and then copy them over. But the problem is then they're out of sync. And especially on a dual boot laptop, that can be annoying because if you, say you're sitting here in Firefox and, you know, you're surfing the web and I've got, you know, on my machine right now, I have like 6 tabs open and I'm doing some research. And say, you know, I go back a few hours later and I say, okay, I remember I was looking at that on the laptop. And I boot up, but for whatever reason, I've booted into Windows this time. The Firefox settings and stuff are all different, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not anymore. Because what I did is by symbolic linking my profiles on my Linux partition to point over to my Windows partition, they now are the same either way. So if I boot into Windows or I boot into Linux on this laptop, I get the same settings everywhere. And it's really neat because if I'm doing something... Let's take a really practical example. Let's say I'm researching some stuff, and my wife asked me to look up something on World of Warcraft. So I go to, you know, some Warcraft site, and I find a bunch of info, and then I say, okay, you know what? I want to play now. And so since I still don't have it working very well under Wine, I need to reboot into Windows to play World of Warcraft. But now I want to call up that website that I was just looking at because I don't have it handy. Well, now I can because the settings are the same. So all my settings, my email, my web browser, stuff like that, follows me back and forth between Windows and Linux. That was the first thing that I've done with the writable, you know, NTFS partitions, and I'm sure I'm going to do a lot more. But that was the first thing that came to mind, and I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I like it too because. Mainly because of the fact that I dual boot, and a lot of my documents and stuff have been on my Windows partition,
mm-hmm.
and instead of having to say log off and get onto my Windows XP partition, maybe either copy it to a flash drive or even email it to myself, and then mm-hmm. log back into Ubuntu to download it, you know, I can just trade it back and forth and. Do the basically the same thing as I would do without having to log out. So
yeah, and again, we talked about this last week. You always could read your stuff off of your XP partitions, but you couldn't write to it.
Right.
Unless they were in the FAT32 file system, which was just garbage, and I wouldn't recommend anybody use that anyway.
Exactly. And then the one practical thing is that I would move a document over to my Ubuntu partition, and then need to save that. You know, into both partitions. So
exactly. So you either had to, you know, like you said, you do some do-si-do where you email it to yourself, or you had to have a FAT32 partition, you had to put it on a thumb drive or something.
Exactly.
And now you just don't have to do that anymore. It's and again, you could do this in previous versions, but it's now it's done, you know, by default. It's enabled, and that's great. What actually got me thinking about this, I haven't quite done this yet, but I'm seriously thinking about actually just symlinking my entire home folder to my documents and settings folder on Windows. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of don't want a cave, you know, because I don't want all my stuff living on the Windows partition necessarily.
Right.
But if, you know, if dual booting is a fact of life, at least I have that option. And the nice thing is that way I don't have to, again, I don't have to think, now which home folder did I put this in? You know, was it in this one or that one? But I'm not sure. That may have some unforeseen consequences. Like my both GNOME and Windows, for instance, use a directory called desktop to, you know, hold the contents of your desktop.
Right.
So I don't know. It might be a little weird just to have my, like, you know, Windows shortcuts and stuff showing up under GNOME. But you know, I'm toying with that idea. I like hacking at it. It might be fun.
Sure.
And it might totally, you know, screw things up. I don't know.
Well, you can always try.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Exactly.
And that's pretty much my take on Gutsy Gibbon as it is right now.
Yeah, I personally I'm liking it so far. The one beef that I have is that the repositories for Gutsy are holding a lot of beta software, and specifically Audacity. I downloaded Audacity or installed Audacity on Gutsy the other day, but I'm running the beta version 1.3.3, and the stable version is 1.2. So I'm taping this on Audacity, the unstable version. So hopefully this is going to work, and so far it has been. And I see wave files or waveforms, you know, on my laptops, and it seems to sync together with my voice and your voice. So this is, however, unstable, and some of the stuff in the repository may be unstable as well. So
are you saying that we're going to have to record this whole thing again?
Oh, no. This looks pretty good, actually. So we're doing fine, and I will definitely, as soon as this is over, we'll be saving this and double saving it again. So, but really, the only beef that I have were the fonts kind of looked a little different. Mm-hmm. Even after I installed the Microsoft TrueType Core fonts, and mm-hmm. it wasn't showing up very well. But overall, the impression has been very good. The reason why I'm running Ubuntu, in the last podcast, I was going to install Zubuntu on my laptop mm-hmm. because of the hardware, you know, the hardware issue. And
right.
I did install it at first. It worked just fine. Everything was so nice, speedy, until I wanted to get onto the network, the home network that I have set up. And I could read, you know, on my other computers, I could read my laptop, but I could not read my other computers on my laptop. It wasn't showing up in the network neighborhood, the equivalent of the network neighborhood in Zubuntu. So I fiddled around with it for a couple of hours, and I decided I just didn't have the time to fiddle around with it. And so I went back to Ubuntu, and it was a clean installation. And as far as performance between Feisty and Gutsy, and all things being relative, of course, this seems to be about the same, you know, performance-wise. Things are, you know, opening up about the same. You know, not as fast as a brand new machine would do it, but it would take the same amount of time to open up Firefox and Feisty as it would in Gutsy. So overall, my impression is definitely a thumbs up, and I would really have to reach to find something, you know, something really wrong with what I'm seeing right now. Do you have anything else about your upgrade?
I don't know. I think everything went fairly well, and I don't know. I think that's about it. What about what other people are saying these days?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I've actually have one email from. Let's go right ahead to the emails. I have one email from Luke, and he sends me an email saying, "Hello to both. I was writing to ask if you had managed to install or upgrade. Yes, and yes, I have. I've installed a clean installation. And he says he's done a Kubuntu upgrade, but he couldn't get the live CD to work. Then the new install failed also. So then lots of searching in the forums, he found a fault. He had to boot into the old kernel. I think that's the old kernel. No, that's not the old kernel. Yeah, that's the old kernel, 2.6.20.16. Not the latest. Then he found a fix for the BusyBox fault he had. It didn't recognize the IDE hard drive, only SATA hard drives. He posted the fix on the forum, and now he's running. And he says that it's a bit slower than Feisty, and he's wondering if anyone else is experiencing the same thing. So I myself haven't noticed any difference at all. Of course, I'm running Ubuntu, and I'm comparing it to Feisty, and again, as I stated earlier, everything's working just about the same on the laptop, on old hardware. And what about you, Peter?
I'm not noticing any speed degradation at all, other than, you know, a little bit with the Windows redrawing when I enable the desktop effects, but that's pretty much my own doing because, you know, I like to drag out the animations and stuff. Mm-hmm. As you and I were chatting, though, a little bit, it's really hard when people say, you know, that things are slower. That really could mean anything. And, you know, I don't know, does that mean it takes longer for programs to launch? Does it take longer for your system to boot? We get concerns and, you know, questions like that from clients all the time. And they'll say, you know, like, everything is slow. I'm like, okay, well, can you quantify that? You know, what does that mean? So I really don't know. I'd have to see what he's talking about. But to me, you know, the windows, the menus seem to respond snappily. Programs seem to load normally. I don't see any delays or, you know, it just doesn't feel any slower to me. So, you know, maybe I'm just lucky.
Yeah, okay. So if you are having some performance issues, please feel free to email us here. We're in the process of getting new email addresses. And you can always send it to freshubuntu@gmail.com. Or you can send it to harlem@freshubuntu.org or Peter's new email address, petern@freshubuntu.org. So,
woohoo!
So, other than that, let's go on to the next email.
Let's see. The next one was from
Jason.
Oh, we had one from Jason Watkins, didn't we?
Yes.
Right, what'd he have to say?
He says he has Gutsy running inside of Parallels, and I don't know if you recall the last time he tried to do it, he couldn't install it, but this time he did do it because he ran the alternate install CD, and so that did the trick. Reading more of his email, he states, the VESA drivers for the live CV just do not work in Parallels VM environment. He upgraded his Office desktop from Gutsy Tribe 3 to the final release. And he did this on Friday, last Friday, and it took around 3 hours to get it, to get and download all of the packages. He left his server at version 7.04, Feisty version, until a compelling reason to upgrade becomes apparent. One thing you could do to secure a laptop hard disk without encrypting it, and I'm thinking he's talking about the new encryption for Gutsy. One thing you can do without encrypting it is to set the laptop's BIOS to boot from the hard disk first and then require the BIOS password to change the boot device and order. The BIOS passwords can be removed, but it is far difficult on a laptop than it is on a desktop PC. Not all laptop BIOS support this feature, but many recent models do. Yep. Anyway, keep up the great show and good work.
Yep, I agree with it. It definitely is easier, but I mean, if someone seriously wants to get the data off of your hard drive, I mean, they'll just pop the case on your laptop and yank the drive out. So, but still, you know, adding that encryption thing, I think that's really cool, and that's definitely something I need to play with.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things for the ultra paranoid. Yeah, you know, personally. But yeah, I would like to play around with it as well. I don't know if it's going to work very well on my old laptop, but and I don't know if it'll work on a partitioned hard drive either, so we'll see. Maybe I'll wait. I should wait. And I don't want to ruin anything.
I was going to say, what are you waiting for?
You're right. thanks for the emails to the both of you. One last one from a gentleman who left a comment on the blog at freshubuntu.org. His name was Stas Sushkov, and he said you should try using gwget instead of the default Firefox downloader. Just a thought in such case. Anyway, nice podcast. And he's been on Gutsy since Tribe 1, so apparently he's been beta testing all the tribes. So thank you for
he's
the...
Go ahead. Braver man than me.
Yep, me too. you know, I only have a couple of machines to do any type of production work. My laptop I use for, you know, it's not really ultra-sensitive data or anything like that. I just use it for emailing and getting on the internet and that kind of stuff. Yeah, he's pretty brave. I think what he's talking about, instead of the default Firefox downloader, was downloading the ISO, and you can use gwget instead of the default Firefox downloader. Although I don't know if there would be much of a performance increase. Are you familiar with any of that stuff?
Not so much. I mean, I know that BitTorrent is supposed to be, you know, the bomb when it comes to downloading, and I never really seem to find much of a performance increase there. In fact, usually when I go to download stuff by torrent, I find it slower than just doing a regular old download via my browser or FTP. So
yeah,
I don't know. He may be onto something.
He may be. I might test that out. You know, a little bit later on in the week, but. You know, the reason why the BitTorrents are slow is because your ISP is monitoring
throttling
that.
Them.
Throttling, exactly. So anyway, that's it for all the emails I have. We have a voicemail from a listener, and I will play that in a second. But
yeah, we've got our first listener voicemail, mm-hmm. and that's great. This guy did it all right. Let's play it, and then I'll give a little review.
Yeah, go ahead and play it. I think I can hear it from here, and then it'll record at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Hey, guys. This is Don from Pittsburgh, PA. First off, I just want to say have a great Halloween, and also I love the new format. My question is, what do you guys use to record each other? Are you in the same room recording live, or are you using Skype? And if you're using Skype, how do you record the conversations? I've been looking around, and it seems very difficult to actually set this up to get Skype to record your actual phone calls. Thanks again.
Well, that was really good. I want to say before we answer his question that was very tastefully done. I really like the sound effects in the background. The volume levels were good, and he sent it as an Ogg Vorbis, completely open source audio file.
That's
so,
right.
Great job. But as for the audio quality and questions on how to do it, Harlem, I think this is all you.
Yeah. Well, to answer his question, we are using Skype. It would be actually quite expensive for him to come here or for me to go over there to be in the same room. As he lives in
Vermont. I'm in Vermont.
And I live in Oregon for the time being. And so we are using Skype. And we have the Linux client of Skype. And you're right. It is very difficult to do a Skype conversation and to record it at the same time on the same computer. So what we do is we use a setup called a Mix Minus. And I will post a link to how you do that in the show notes, and but essentially what you have are two computers, or at least one computer and one recording device. You must have a mixer with auxiliary inputs and auxiliary outputs, and the video explains it quite nicely, but essentially you take his voice out of it, and that way you won't get any feedback or any echo. Again, the video explains it quite nicely, and I will post a link to that in the show notes. Other than that, we also use Audacity to do the recording. So my setup is two computers. I use my laptop and my desktop, a mixer various wires and cables. We are using Skype at the moment, and because it provides for the best signal, and that's about it. And it's all relatively, you know, relatively free if you have a mixer. That was how we figured it out, and it actually took us a couple of weeks to get the get this all down pat, because neither one of us knew how to do it to begin with. So, but we did eventually figure it out, and there you have it. That's how we do it.
Yep. The only thing I would add to that is I maintain a desire to switch over at some point, hopefully in the near future, to Gizmo. And the Gizmo project, because Skype is one of those, you know, Skype, eBay, it's one of those big corporations out there that's doing stuff that gets on my nerves. And the most recent one was, I think it was a couple months ago when they realized that the Skype executable was, for some reason, reading things like your password file and your Firefox history or your Firefox bookmarks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And there is really no reason that I can think why they need to be, you know, doing that other than perhaps they're, you know, collecting my personal information. And stuff like that really bothers me.
Right, right. Well, we'll have to give it a try one of these days. Yeah. And who knows, you might be recording this on Gizmo. So it doesn't really necessarily have to be Skype, and that you bring up a good question. It doesn't have to be Skype. It can be any SIP, voice over IP phone. It can be a Asterisk. It can be Skype. It can be Gizmo or any other myriad of voice over IP phone systems. Just as long as you have two computers and a mixer.
Thanks for the feedback. Keep it coming. Yeah, I would just like to say that if anyone else wants to send us email feedback, we love that. And audio feedback, hey, that's even better. We love to hear from our listeners, and you've got our email addresses now, my brand spanking new email address of petern@freshubuntu.org. And also, Harlem and I both have blogs, which we'll include in the show notes. Right. And I don't remember, Harlem, are you publicly followable on Twitter? Can people follow your Twitters?
Oh, yes, I am publicly followable. Let me see what my...
Followable? Is that a new word? I may have just made that up. I don't know.
Yes, I am. I think I'm under Fresh Ubuntu, but you can either do Fresh Ubuntu or Harlem, and I'm under both. I actually made two profiles for Twitter, one for Fresh Ubuntu and one for my personal stuff. But so far, I've only been using my Fresh Ubuntu one. So if you want to follow me on that. That's great. I've been... Since we're on this social networking kind of tone right now, I'm kind of contemplating getting out of Facebook. And
me too.
You know, I was thinking about all that information that's on there, and I'm, and then Microsoft's kind of bought a stake in Facebook, so I don't know how.
Oh, did
that's
that actually
work
go
out.
Through?
That's from what I hear. They bought a 1.6% stake in Facebook for roughly around $250 million. So the valuation of Facebook was valued at, for the whole thing, $15 billion. That's with a B. And so, you know, all that being said, I think it's a little overvalued at this point. You know, I don't know about you, but social networking... You know, the people who are on social networking at the moment can just get off of it anytime they like. I mean, you know, we saw that with Dig when they had the a few months ago where they were posting the DRM fix.
Oh yeah.
You know, they had like
the code.
The Dig. Yep. They had that code that they posted, and then shortly after that, the Dig revolt. I don't know. They called it. I don't know what they called it. Black Tuesday, whatever. I don't know. But anyway, a lot of people migrated out of Dig and went to another social networking site, social news site, and so they could easily do that with Facebook and or MySpace or any number of the social networking things. So,
anyway. But your info is all still left behind.
Exactly. So
that's the thing.
There is a way to do it in Facebook to what they call it is. Committing Facebook suicide, so I've been contemplating doing that. So,
Yeah, there's a bunch. I remember, you know, the simple thing is you just log into Facebook and click on your little, you know, deactivate your account thing. But somebody posted something, I don't know, it was either on Dig or maybe Lifehacker or something a couple months ago. It was like how to really delete your Facebook profile. And there was, you know, some significant steps involved in that. So I don't really know. I don't know, and I'm at the point where I need to delete all that stuff because I didn't really put anything in my Facebook profile that I haven't put on my blogs other than I'm friends with this person or this, you know, person's friends with me. But, yeah, it's something to consider because I was just telling my friend, the person who I told about Ubuntu over the weekend, he just started a blog and he's on Twitter now. And I told him, I said, just remember, you know, anything you put on there, just assume that it's public. Anything that you put up on a blog or if you send out on a, you know, any social networking site, just assume that it's public and ask yourself if a prospective employer, you know, got this or if this came up in court, you know, what would I say?
Right. So. Yeah. Well, sorry to get a little bit off track. Anyway, this was a great way to get a hold of us, actually, sending us a voicemail or a What Don did was send us an OGG file, but it could be any old file, WAV file, MP3, OGG, Vorbis, if you want to. Just fire up your Audacity if you have it and get a microphone and start recording. You can send that clip. You'd, of course, have to export it as a WAV or as an MP3 or OGG file, and then send that clip to either Peter or I at one of the email addresses that we have. So that's a really great way to do it. You'll get on the podcast, and, you know. Well, that's going to do it. You can, of course, leave emails and comments at the blog. You can leave comments at the blog at freshubuntu.org. You can also leave comments at Peter's blog, which is Peter's Soapbox at blog.nicolaitis.com. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. What else were we going to do? I think that was going to do it, right?
Pretty much. I think that's all we got.
Yeah, no, not really a whole lot of news this week.
No. The news is that Gutsy is out.
I think that, and you know what? I've seen this happen before with each of the releases, actually. You know, Feisty, a week and a half, 2 weeks afterwards, there's like relatively no Ubuntu news. You know, it might be sporadic. And then, you know, a month later, it's like, a ton of it. So people are testing their systems, they're playing around with it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So anywho, that's going to do it for this week, and we just thank you for joining us. Again, you can check out the show notes at freshubuntu.org. Leave us an email at freshubuntu@gmail.com or our new email addresses at harlem@freshubuntu.org and PeterN@freshubuntu.org. So that's going to do it, and thank you very much. Any last words? Do we have a... are we playing any games this week?
I don't have any games in store, but hopefully next week we'll have another episode of 6 Degrees of John O'Bacon for everybody.
That'll be cool. I like that. I like that game. I think that's going to be a good game.
That was a good addition. I'm glad you thought of that.
So any last words, any parting words, should I say?
Parting words. I would just say if you haven't downloaded Gutsy yet, what are you waiting for?
Yep, I agree. And you're right. With every release, it gets easier and easier to transition. And, you know, I can hardly wait till Hardy Heron, which is coming out in, what, in April? 0804.
And, 0804.
So that's going to do it this week. Thank you very much for joining us. And do we have a Man Page Minute also? Which is or where is?
Where is. I think this week we're doing neither which or where is. Your call.
Okay. And we'll do where is this week, and that'll be coming up next. So thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Welcome to the Man Page Minute. This week, we're going to be covering the command, where is. Where is, W-H-E-R-E-I-S, is a program which locates source and binaries and manuals for specified files. So this is useful if you're compiling your own programs, or if you're a developer, or if you're just curious as to where all your kind of stuff is located. So the most common use of where is you just say where is and then the name of a package. I'm going to choose, say, Python, for instance, the Python programming language. So I type where is Python, and it tells me that it's in user bin Python 2.4, etsy Python, user lib Python, etc. Basically, this tells you the binaries, so the executable files. That's like user bin Python, and we'll cover that later as to how I know which is which. It also covers the source, so if the source files are there, it'll tell me like where my .c files, the C language compiled files, and also the man pages. It lists those as in user share man man1 Python. This is mostly for curiosity's sake. If you're a new user and you're just curious as to where all my stuff is, or where all the stuff is that makes up a certain package. And again, it's going to show you the executable files, documents, and the sources. So if you want to roll up your sleeves and get real down and dirty, where is will tell you where to start. That's the Man Page Minute this week, and we'll see you again next time.
So there you have it, folks. I am so happy that you decided to join us this week on Fresh Ubuntu. We just wanted to say have a nice week. Look forward to a very special podcast next week, or maybe late this week, where we have special guests from two very special shows. One, Jason Watkins, who has been a guest on In the Trenches, a tech podcast, and David Yates, who is the podcast host of A Lot of Linux Links. Look forward to both of them being on here, and that should be out in either, if not by the end of this week, the week of Halloween, then early the week after. So look forward to that, and I am very excited to have the both of them on. Without further ado, we will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.